Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, bonjour, and buenos dias. It is Wednesday, April 19th. I know a few more languages. Good morning, but I won't show
Shalom.
Off.
Shalom.
Yes. Well, no, that's,
I guess that's hello. Hi.
Yeah.
Buongiorno.
Boker tov. Yes.
I forgot that.
That's good morning.
Buongiorno.
In Hebrew. Buongiorno, of course.
In Italian.
And I don't know in Chinese.
Bonjour.
I did say bonjour.
Oh, of course.
But I didn't say it with your accent. So it,
it doesn't
so you
count.
Didn't notice.
It didn't count. That's so funny.
So, you said you know a little bit of French, right?
Oui, je parle français depuis 8 ans.
Wow, that's better than I do. I mean, I can understand a little bit, but to talk, my God, that's pretty good. But you lived in Paris for a while, right?
I lived in Italy and Oxford for years, but I went to Paris a lot.
Oh,
and
okay.
I studied French for like 10 years in school. My dad spoke French.
10 years will do it.
So, my sister, my dad spoke French to us. My name is Victoire. For Victoria. And I think it sounds really rad.
Yeah, it does.
But I speak Italian too, and now I get them confused. So I say half my things in French, half
Italian. Really? Because they're so similar, right?
Yeah, they're not actually similar at all. Italian and Spanish are, but French and Italian are not. So I go from like, je parle français, like a lot of that, to like, like, bicchiere, like all in the mouth, in front of the mouth.
Right.
So it's weird.
Right. But the words are similar. It's just the way they're said, isn't that, right?
Yeah, like fromage is French for cheese, and then formaggio is cheese. So they sound the same, but it's the different part
or
of your...
Or bonjour and buongiorno.
Yeah, very right.
And there's a lot of that stuff. I noticed because they come from Latin, you know, so...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When they have the root language in common, you're going to have some root words.
Yeah, yeah. And the story of English is actually pretty interesting, too, you know? I mean, the way it's evolved.
Yes.
And it's taken from many different
influences. Yeah, we're kind of a mutt. We're like the bastardized mix.
It's really a different language. I mean, there's no other language in the world where R is pronounced the way we pronounce it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Think about it, you know? I mean, the TH sound is not very common.
But what about like je rêve, like the R for like in French?
Right.
Rêve.
Well, in Hebrew, R is ra, like boker tov.
Oh.
So it's not as throaty.
I see.
But it's resh. So it's throaty too.
It's not like R.
Right.
Like R, a pirate, like an R.
Right. R is like from the top of the throat, you know?
Yeah.
And the French and the Hebrew one is really low.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, but there are
sounds
in other languages that we don't have, like ha and things like that. So it works both ways, you know? But it's interesting, you know, how some languages borrow words. So you would have a letter in the language that's not really there. Like J, for example, does not exist in the Hebrew alphabet.
Right.
So we take a G and we put a little apostrophe on it or something.
It's fine.
And it becomes J.
Yeah, you're fine. Just
right.
Put that little hat on. It's
exactly,
fine.
You know.
You know, in D.C., Washington, D.C., where I'm from, they have the streets are by grid. And one of the ways it goes is in downtown, it goes A Street, B Street, C Street. Now, Thomas Jefferson helped create the architecture of D.C., the setup of D.C. Now, there's no J Street. It goes A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, K, because Thomas Jefferson didn't like John Jay,
really?
One of the Federalists. So he took out the J name.
Wow.
So they should just put a G with a little hat on it.
Instead. Even though he was Jefferson, huh?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I know. No J.
No J. Very interesting,
Tori. Very interesting.
See, there you go. Trivia.
Didn't like that John Jay.
Yeah. Well.
No, thank you.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was very interesting. I would have loved to live at those times, you know?
Oh, my God.
Those times.
And it's like living with Da Vinci and Michelangelo, you know, when they were living together and working together in the same space.
Right.
It's like the Renaissance. It's like finding these great minds. I mean, not only was Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin political, but then the guy is inventing electricity
right,
over here.
He's got
his spectacles. He's creating bifocals over there. Jefferson's creating the city. It's like very well-rounded, amazing men of great thought and vision. I mean, we are so far from that. There's a really funny thing that's going around is on the news, they showed Trump coming out with the Easter bunny with the big glasses for Easter. And it's cute. And they're sitting there at the podium. And on the scroll, you know, on the bottom, it goes President of the United States Trump. And then in parentheses, it goes left. So that, of course, if people didn't know, it wasn't the guy in the bunny suit. It was the guy on the left. So people were like, captains are the best.
Oh, yeah. Man.
So
people are doing a lot of things with Trump now that I've never seen before.
Yeah, but it was so funny. The news had to clarify.
Yeah, right?
Left, not the guy in the bunny suit. But that was a time of great... And some people say Kennedy. In Kennedy's era, my mom and my mother-in-law, and they talk about Camelot. They say in the 60s, it was like this brief glimmering moment of sort of this, the arts were coming back, and it just seemed like a different time, you know? And so, I mean, there's different times in lives when you wish you could have been born.
That's true, right? You know? But at the same time, I'm really happy we're here, you know, because we're like the most advanced that the world has ever been. We can look at history and really learn from it.
We have sanitary things going on that are great. Good toilet stuff happening.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, a lot of cool stuff,
plumbing.
Too. So we shouldn't be so down on ourselves all the time.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, we might have elected a moron, but,
hey,
you know, we
we're
still
trying. We're at least we voted. No, I'm so funny. I know. And I think, honestly, I think America, again, we do something so crazy. It's like a pendulum. It has to come back.
Right.
People don't like it this far.
No.
Even like the hardest Republicans, it's hard for them to go this far away from sort of sanity.
Right.
So, just speaking of that, in the red district of Georgia, really red state, a Democrat almost won by getting over 50%, but there's going to be a runoff between a Democrat for the first time, John Ossoff. So everyone's watching this Georgia race, and it's like crazy that Georgia would ever go this way.
Red, right?
Yeah.
Well, maybe times are a-changing.
Yeah, I can't sing. Let's not try. Did you hear that attempt at Bob Dylan? Times are a-changing. That's not good.
Sounds as good as anything.
I got to tell you, I went to go see Dylan at the Hollywood Bowl, and that man, I love Dylan. I wrote my thesis on Dylan. He cannot sing anymore.
Can't sing,
He's like, I'm going to go.
Really?
Yeah.
So you just kind of go there to see him.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you go and then you're like, ooh, is the cat dying? It's not good. I think he was with Wilco, or he was with another band that you go to see.
Yeah.
But man, he is... You want to like good, but it's not good.
No, that's true. Truth be told, I don't get Bob Dylan at all. I really don't. You know,
really?
I can't sit through one of his songs.
Really?
But I do appreciate that he's a big deal.
Yeah, in his heyday, I mean, I wrote my entire thesis from college on Bob Dylan and the artifices that he made as an artist, because he is a Jew from Minnesota.
Right.
And he's born Robert Zimmerman, okay?
Right.
He created this Woody Guthrie, I'm a Nomad Gypsy. That was all planned.
Really?
All of it.
Oh, wow.
And so he was a rebel. Like, he stood out, but he was born like this, like, Nebuchadnezzar Jew in Minnesota.
Right.
He created different parts.
Probably the only Jew in Minnesota at the time.
I think there's
like
two or three, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe
right.
There's like a few dozen. But he created this, and what he created, I think, is beautiful, and the poetry that he wrote, the lyrics is what I love about Bob Dylan and the poetry in it. But he created different parts of himself to be Bob Dylan. That is a made up name. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that is interesting.
So it's planned. That's pretty
planned,
cool, you know?
That's why I wrote my thesis on really the idea that he planned. And then he went through like a Christian phase. And then he went through like a harder rock phase. And then he went back to like folk phase. But he was never born that nomad in like a campfire out in the West. You know what I mean?
That never happened.
That never happened. He
was
like a little Jew in Minnesota.
So it's more marketing stuff. And this is interesting because I read the book a couple of years ago by Gene Simmons from Kiss.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was also saying how they were... it was a business thing. They were constantly adjusting themselves to what was going on in the rock world at that
time.
It's just
that, like, instead of a YouTube thing, they're like face paint because they didn't have YouTube.
Right.
It's like, how can we brand ourselves?
Exactly. You know, and then the music, too. They've changed their music over the years, you know. And, I mean, they've had some ballads that I actually like.
Gene Simmons
like
is a
Beth.
Smart man.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, so he actually wrote like a book about, it's half about his life and half about how to improve yours. And I liked it. He's pretty smart. He's Israeli, right?
Oh, I didn't know
that. He was born in Israel.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but then he immigrated when he was 5 years old or something.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, he had a show, I think it was MTV or VH1.
Yes, about his family Jewels.
Kiss the Jewels. Oh, the Family Jewels. Kiss the Jewels.
Or something like that.
No, I think you're right. Mine's weird. And he's just a savvy business guy.
Yeah,
so it makes sense that they came up with that. And it's so stupid. It's black and white with a cat makeup. It's a grown man in a Speedo with a cat makeup.
And if you've seen all their merchandising, I mean, I remember on Howard Stern, he used to make fun of him all the time, even though he was there in the studio.
Oh, yeah.
But he would say, because they came out with like Kiss coffins and stuff, you know, and caskets. I'm like going, what the hell
is
this?
It's a sad world when we're going.
You know?
But that's jumping the shark right there. Yeah, that's jumping the shark.
So
I wanted to tell you about a documentary series we're watching on Netflix that I want you to watch. It's only like, I think, half an hour or an hour. So these are good for you.
Cool.
And it's called, I think, Soundbreaking or Soundbreakers. Uh-huh. And it's about the background of certain songs and music. So it's producers in their studio. And for instance, they show Adele's guy, I don't remember the guy's name, Mark Rock, I'll come up with it. He's this guy that the big break for Adele, like Rolling in the Deep, you know what I mean?
Right.
So you see him sitting there in his studio and he's got the tracks out and he shows you each track and he separates it each so you can hear each track.
Wow.
And he goes, we wanted something really kind of like different for the drum beat that you hear. If you turn the music on, it goes like this in the beginning. Boom. It has this kind of clapping sound, and you don't know what it is. And he's like, we were in this really crappy studio, and the wind was open, and the door was open, and there was a porch with leaves tumbling by, and Adele sat outside, and I put a microphone, and she stamped her foot on the wooden porch. Whoa. And that's the sound that's really so famous from Rolling in the Deep. And it's like, oh, that's so cool. They talk about Pink Floyd like speeding up certain sounds. So you would really like it.
Yeah, I would.
You would love it. Okay, and there's one on sampling. There's one on ghetto sampling.
Yeah. When people
the Bee
Gees,
take
other people.
Barry Gibb. Yeah, there's a Barry Gibb one.
Oh, wow. They actually reviewed on Howard Stern the Bee Gees tribute.
Oh, nice.
And so I heard people singing their songs, but I didn't like any of them. I don't know. Yeah.
The new ones, you mean?
No. I meant, yeah, like the ones that sang the tribute, the covers.
Oh, I see.
Because it was a Bee Gees tribute, and I'm sure Barry sang a few songs, and I missed the show, by the way. But mostly it was like Ed Sheeran doing a, you know.
Yeah, that's not good.
No, you don't do Bee Gees songs.
Yeah.
So, like, how can you mend a broken heart or something? I don't remember.
No.
But, yeah, so, but at any rate, I'm going to catch that.
That's
a good reason to go back to Netflix for a while.
I think it's Netflix, but, man, each episode, they did one on Single Ladies. You know the song Single Ladies by Beyonce? Really?
Yeah.
That was like her big
I'm
hit.
Not a Beyonce fan.
Oh.
So I don't know.
This was like a huge hit. Like, this made Beyonce, right?
Right.
And he shows, it was three sounds. It was a drum beat, some clapping, and a sound like this, like whoop, 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 whoop. Oh. And it's just repeated those three things over and over and over again, and that's the whole song.
Really?
There's like almost no music. It is those three sounds over and over and over again. And he said when they found those three, he goes, I knew it was it. He goes, what would Beyonce sing over this whoop, whoop, whoop? Right. And it was like, oh, the Single Ladies. Oh, it was great.
Oh, yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah, you'll like it.
Yeah, I love stuff like that. I just got the book on Elton John. It's called Captain Fantastic, and it's like how he exploded in the 70s, you know. I mean, if you think how many hits, we were talking about the Beatles yesterday. Elton John has had so many hits.
I'm fascinated by Elton John, not only because I watched a documentary on Elton John, too.
Ah.
When he goes to places, he has a hotel room just for his sunglasses. Just so you know this.
Are you serious?
And he showed us the hotel room in the documentary.
Oh, wow.
But here's the thing. He writes the music.
The music and then Bernie Taupin.
So I've never heard of this before. This other guy who they don't talk that often writes the lyrics.
Bernie Taupin is his name.
Bernie Taupin, and then Elton writes the music, right?
Right, right.
And then they put them together, but they don't talk.
That's not true, is it?
Yeah, they rarely, like, he sends, apparently Elton John in the documentary is like, I send him some music.
Uh-huh.
He comes back with lyrics, or sometimes he'll send me a poem. Yeah.
Oh,
but they say they don't really connect.
They don't collaborate in person.
Not at all.
Wow.
They hardly talk.
Well, I'm sure I'll find out once I read the book.
It's excellent.
I can update
It's such
you.
An interesting way of writing music, I think.
I've never heard of another.
But
such a collaboration that almost all his songs were written by
him. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. But they don't really... It's not like they're in the studio together at all.
Right.
So strange.
And in fact, Bernie Taupin, many people may probably know, don't know most of them. He had his own album.
Oh.
And he came out, and there's this great song. I'll look it up in a minute, okay?
Okay.
And it's you got to hear it because it's one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard.
Is it T-A-U-P-I-N, Taupin?
I think it's Taupin. I don't know because it's T-A-U.
Yeah, that's what I said, Taupin. Yeah,
right, Taupin, like Taupin, whatever.
Got it.
But he had a song. Let me just type in his name real quick. Let's see if I remember the name of the song. Citizen Jane. Mm. I got to play you a little bit of this because I love the song. And you can't find it in many places, you know? It's really cool.
Is this him singing too?
Yeah, that's Bernie Taupin singing.
Oh, okay.
That's his debut album. And this is from some time ago. Check it out.
He's sexy.
It is. The video is very sexy. A woman taking off her clothes. Yeah.
Some sax solo.
Right. Isn't that cool?
It's groovy.
I mean, it grows on. It's like, it's memorable. I don't know.
I don't like his voice very much, but I like the music.
Really?
Yeah. Citizen Jane.
Check this out. Oh, okay. It's the other part. Anyway, you know.
It's groovy.
I love this song. It's called Citizen Jane, if you guys are interested. And this is probably from the 90s, I think.
Really?
Yeah. But at any rate, it's funny. There was just a video. I just closed the window, but there was a little video that says Elton John says he never collaborated with Bernie on anything.
Yeah.
I mean, what is that?
I know. That's what I'm saying. They have a weird, very frosty relationship.
That's probably what he meant. They didn't do it in person.
Maybe. Yeah, but like if you watch it, they don't seem to really know each other that well.
Really?
That's what I'm saying. It's a very odd, but
very
it works
odd, right?
Perfectly well. Right. You'd think that they would be close or know each other. They apparently have very, very little to talk about.
Well,
but they come up with these incredible songs together.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I grew up on these songs.
Oh, they're great.
So that's why I'm looking forward to reading the book and stuff. I'll have a lot of facts about Elton John.
Yeah, I mean, and then they showed him having, you know, he has his reputation of being the diva and having some breakdowns. Well, the documentary captures the breakdowns.
Really?
Captures the tantrums, and he won't go on stage, and he's throwing things.
Yeah.
He just throws the biggest tantrums I've ever seen, and his workers and the people around him are used to it, and they just handled it. But he really throws temper tantrums.
Yeah. And he's mellowed out over the years.
He's very cool now, yeah.
I mean, he used to jump on his piano, and the stuff he would do
Gaga.
Was amazing. Yeah.
He was Gaga.
He was.
He was the Gaga. That's why Gaga, and he, it's hard to be a flamboyantly gay pianist and make it in rock and roll.
Yeah.
But in the 80s, it was great.
Exactly. 70s, 80s, and nobody knew he was gay either, you know?
But it's like he didn't have the look, really. He was a silly looking guy, but he really killed it.
He really
Talk about
did.
Marketing.
And then, I mean, the movie Tommy, he pretty much stole the show there with Pinball Wizard.
Pinball Wizard has to be a
Do you know the version that Elton John
No,
sang?
I only know the Who.
Really?
Yeah, I know the Who.
Oh, well, you got to hear this one. I mean, it became such a huge hit. But the thing is, if you ever watch the movie, I mean, he was like playing pinball machines. He was standing on like huge boots. Okay, so he was like really tall, and I mean, the movie Tommy, I remember it. I was 15 years old.
It was a weird movie.
It was weird, and so was the opera that they wrote.
Very.
But blind boy, deaf, dumb, and blind. Deaf, dumb, and blind.
He was good at pinball.
Good at pinball.
Really good. Not just good. I mean, real good.
Right.
If you know what pinball is, go ahead and look it up, you weirdo.
Oh, you think so? People don't know what pinball
is? I think a lot of people don't know what pinball
is. Really? Because they have like video games on pinball now, so
yes,
maybe they do.
I think
know?
It may be be retro and cool, but I don't think a lot of people know pinball, which is sad.
Yeah, that's true, right?
Yeah. But Elton John, man, you think of Gaga now and you think of where she got a lot of that inspiration for her crazy outfits.
Right.
That's Elton John right there.
Probably, huh?
Oh, yeah. She credits him.
Yeah.
They went on tour. I mean, they're close.
Yeah. She's sort of like...
In fact, I think Gaga is the godmother to Elton John's babies.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they're very, very close.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, they're definitely both innovators, you know?
Well, they're very similar.
Yeah.
Outgoing, flamboyant pianists that also have great voices. They're very creative. They couldn't be more similar.
Right.
They attract a lot of a gay, strong audience that's really very, very loyal.
Right.
It's very similar.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Here, you got to hear Elton John. I mean... You got to see the video, too, but you can see it when you get a chance on YouTube.
So this isn't from the movie?
That's from the movie.
So he's on a pinball in boots?
Yeah, he's like huge boots. I mean, what do you call them?
Platforms.
Yeah, sort of. But not platforms.
Stilettos.
Not even that.
Oh.
Stilts.
Stilts.
A little different from The Who, huh? Alright, that's definitely the Elton John. And they're showing Roger Daltrey playing, you know, as a blind boy.
So, and I remember this, he had this wide-eyed expression playing this the blind kid.
Exactly.
And I remember it being very freaky when
right.
I was little.
He is, I'm just looking at it. I don't even remember it. But
oh, yeah, and he goes in the pool and he can't hear.
You've got good memory.
Oh, yeah, it was a very visual moment for me, that movie. Because he crashes through and you hear from his point of view and you can't see or hear.
Right.
And the sound goes quiet and it's like that's how he's hearing and seeing the world.
Right.
It's crazy.
I know. But it was definitely an opera. I mean, I remember I felt so cool. We were visiting the United States and Canada a year before I moved here. So I was 15 years old, and I remember I saw the movie in Toronto, and it hadn't arrived in Israel yet. So when I went back I bought the T-shirt and everything, I was like, wow, I was cool. I was fucking cool. I saw Tommy already and none of you have seen it yet.
See, that memory is really strong for you.
It really
is.
That's
so funny.
Because when you're young, you define cool by the music.
Yeah, it's the pop culture and the music around you. Oh, yeah.
Music is so important for teens. It's unbelievable.
And I think, you know, you and I have talked about this. When you ask someone what's their favorite type of music, it's almost always what they grew up in high school listening to. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is no matter what.
Yeah.
And I talked about the Saturday Night Live cast said they always, when people say, they ask people their favorite Saturday Night Live cast, and they'll say it's always the one you watched in high school.
Right.
And you're always thinking that's the best one.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's like when you were first introduced to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's so interesting. But
it is. It's all generational, you know? Yeah. I mean, how many people do you know, like a parent's age, that would really connect with a rap or something?
Yeah,
you know,
right,
or something
exactly.
Like that, you know?
My mom and I had a really long discussion about rap once when I was starting to, like, you know, listen to hip hop. I mean, I'm not good with music, but I was listening to it in high school, and she was like, I just don't understand how this is music when it was just a drum beat. And I was like, well, would you think if we went to the symphony and an orchestra played a drum solo, would you consider that music? And she was like, well, yeah. And I was like, well, this is the same thing.
And then she
still didn't really get it,
yeah,
but she thought it was a good point.
Yeah, awesome. I think Casey's calling. Hey, Casey.
Morning, people.
Good morning, Casey. How are you?
I feel like we're kids in a class.
I'm enjoying the show. A little musical history. Stuff about Thomas Jefferson, which is interesting.
You see, I mean, Tori's like our teacher every day, you know? The history teacher.
I just don't know where I would ever learn that.
or where you will ever use it again.
Right. But there you go. Eventually, you end up being a radio host and you get
and
to use
somehow it.
It
comes out of
it
your mouth.
It comes out. There you go.
My first stand-up joke ever that I go on stage with is I tell people I look like a celebrity and then I go in a profile and I stand with my hair in a ponytail low. Uh-huh. And then I'm like, you can see it, right? And I say, I look like Thomas Jefferson on the nickel. I look real, a strong resemblance, I think, to Thomas Jefferson on the nickel.
I don't think so.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Oh, that's funny.
I haven't done your movie experiment yet, though, Tori.
I don't understand why not.
Oh, the Pink Floyd
one?
Is that the Pink Floyd one with the...
Yeah, the Dark Side of Oz.
Yeah, the Dark Side
it's
of
the
Oz.
The best thing
yeah.
you could ever do.
Yeah. We were talking about this the other day, watching The
guys,
Wizard of Oz.
Let me call you right back. I just yeah. got super busy real
okay,
quick.
Okay, bye, honey.
We were talking about this the other day, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wonder why they call it Pink Floyd. Do we know why? The name of the band?
I think I've read it somewhere, but I don't.
I forget. You know why Pearl Jam is good? They named it Pearl Jam?
Why?
Because he had an Aunt Pearl who made jam.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And then you want to know another marketing tool?
Uh-huh.
Bare Naked Ladies. You know that group?
Yes.
They were like, why'd you name yourself Bare Naked Ladies? He goes, no one would come to our shows. So we put Bare Naked Ladies on the thing. Everyone showed up because they thought it would be showing Bare Naked Ladies.
Wow.
And he said that's how people started listening
really?
To our song. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a cool name.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you see, in today's reality, folks, we're not as stupid as we seem. So if you want to know the origin of the name, I've got it right here for you.
Let's hear it.
Okay, so the name was created on the spur of the moment when Barrett, I guess, you know, the leader of the band at
sure,
that time,
sure.
when he discovered that another band also called the T-Set were to perform at one of their gigs.
Okay.
So the name is derived from the given names of two blues musicians whose Piedmont Blues Records... Okay, so there was, okay, Pink Anderson and Floyd Council.
Ah, two blues players.
Blues players.
And so that's where it's from, Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
It's a great name.
Pink Anderson and Floyd Council. Now we know.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm terrible at reading like a run-on sentence. I don't think anybody should run-on sentences, you know?
You don't like long movies or run-on, I know.
Yeah, what is it? I don't have the patience for them. Well, I would be amiss if we didn't mention... Aaron Hernandez's death.
Yes.
His suicide this morning in his jail cell.
I actually didn't know about this.
Well, there you go.
So now you're teaching
now
me something.
I'm telling
well,
you.
He was just found not guilty of manslaughter.
No, no. What are you talking about? Are you talking about two different people? Look, Aaron Hernandez has been in jail already for 2 years.
I know, but he was also just, he had another murder rap. And he went up and he was just considered not guilty.
Really? That one?
Yeah. And it was 2 days ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow.
How is that supposed to... Okay, I don't know. But the point is he was found...
But he was found guilty of another murder or previously.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, he's been in jail already since 2015,
that's correct, yeah.
I think. And...
oh, my God. I didn't know this.
Yeah, he hung himself on a sheet from his window cell.
He attempted to block his door from the inside by jamming it with various items.
Right.
My
so
God,
he,
I didn't know this.
He kept them from stopping him.
So this was the former Patriots star. Wow. That's incredible. He's 27.
Yeah.
Or he was.
He was.
Well, I mean, I would say rest in peace, but this guy was convicted of murder. I mean,
right.
I hope
he took a life.
Yeah.
He took a life.
He took more than one. I mean, he was, or I guess
right.
he was acquitted.
And his own life, too. Yeah.
Yeah, man, that's very scary.
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you think there's, like, spiritually, do you think there's a price to pay for suicide?
I don't.
For self-destruction?
I don't. No.
Really?
Because I've seen people who are so in so much pain. I don't want to believe that there's judgment in that way.
Right.
I really don't.
But that depends on how you look at it, you know, because if you look at life like this is a trial, test, lessons, whatever, then you got to survive through these things.
Yeah,
you
but
know?
I don't
and
necessarily.
If you give up,
yeah.
You know, look, suicide is a shortcut. And I understand. I mean, obviously, whoever created this understands that depression can lead you to suicide. But maybe this is just another test. You know,
yeah, but
I mean,
some, I don't think
he didn't. He wasn't willing to live with the consequences.
No, I mean, so and that's different himself. When you're in jail. That's a totally different thing. But you know, I think I don't live this life for another reward or test for an afterlife.
Right.
I live for this life, and
right.
that is a very different thing than Christianity.
Right.
Judaism doesn't have heaven or hell in a certain way. They don't have basically the afterlife like they do in Christianity.
They do.
Oh,
Jews
do. They?
Do. Of course. What? Like reincarnation?
No, like hell. Like you go to hell if you're in...
There is a concept. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, that's where Satan and stuff came from, right? I mean, Satan was a fallen angel from the Bible.
I thought Jews didn't believe in heaven and hell.
No, but they do. Oh. They do. Oh, yeah, they do.
Okay.
Yeah, Eden is Eden, the Garden of Eden. That's heaven.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be heaven.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I believe, I mean, it's a very Buddhist look on it, but I try and live this life just the fullest that I can live for this life, which is very different than thinking about an afterlife.
Right.
So in that respect, I don't.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, like Hasidic Jews and stuff, they only live for the afterlife.
Right. And I don't believe in that.
I know. It's like you've given up everything that you've been given now for something that you might have later.
Yeah.
Because they're thinking of eternity, but you don't know what's going to happen.
Take advantage of this. That's where I am in my life.
And no, I think, me too. Yeah, me too. Yeah.
So in that respect, I think if this is your life and this is how you don't choose to go, and that's your choice.
Right.
I do think it harms a lot of people around you. Of course, I think it's, but I have a hard time judging anyone because I've done things, and I have a hard time judging people in the lowest of their lows because I've been there too.
Right.
And
you don't judge people's morals too? Like, for example, if Aaron Hernandez killed somebody, you wouldn't question him?
Oh, obviously. I judge like right or wrong, but this is they aren't technically, I know they're hurting their family by this, but they're not technically hurting anyone else but themselves.
But
I know they're hurting their families. I hear that.
But do they have a right to take a life? They didn't create the life. Do they have the right to take it?
It's their life.
Even their own. No, but it's not, I mean, what does it mean it's their life?
What does it mean it's not their life?
Okay, so it's their life. That's their journey. Okay. And I feel the journey is about making it to the end. Despite all the adversity, rather than taking the shortcut.
But
you know what I'm saying? Because look, for example, Robin Williams took his life. Let's say it seems like a noble reason, right? He didn't want to be like a burden on his family. He was getting, Parkinson's or something, right?
He was getting dementia and Parkinson's.
Dementia and stuff. So he didn't want to be a burden. But the point is that this is what life is about. You need to learn to be the burden on somebody else and let them take care of you if you have to.
But that's your theory on life.
Well, of course.
But that's not his theory on life. He didn't.
No, that's not his theory. Right. But we were talking about you and me for a moment.
Oh, yeah. That's not my life theory.
Right.
My theory is very much you live the best you can live by overcoming obstacles that you work on and better yourself the best you can for the rest of your life, and you're a spiritual warrior.
Right.
But I don't think that if Robin Williams didn't want to live his life in a different state, that's his right.
I don't know. That's not
his life.
No, okay, but that's the point. It's it's a shortcut, I think. It's given up. It's disturbing nature. I mean, I don't know.
I just don't have a right to judge, I guess. So I feel like that's his life. If that was the decision that was best for him, obviously it's sad. But I'm not living in his shoes.
No, of course not. But you have to ask yourself, I mean, because we were talking about generally about suicide and stuff.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So that's what I'm saying. I don't know. To me, it's like, and you said the it's very, you see, I feel it's very selfish because the destruction to the family is unbelievable. So it's not a selfless act.
I feel you. That in itself is very true. The difference, though, is one is when you were saying Aaron Hernandez, one is killing someone else and this is yourself. But I do feel the impact is enormous for the family.
Right.
And it leaves an enormous sort of hole. And it is horrible. But again, my theory in it has to be consistent. It's like, that is your person, you live your life the way you want to live.
Mm-hmm.
I also believe in if you're terminally ill and you want euthanasia, you should be able to die with dignity the way you want to die.
Right.
And if it's in bed with all of your family members and it's in your sleep with some morphine help, God, bless you. I'm not going to judge unless I'm on my deathbed like that.
But I think you're going more based on moral, right? And more on moral things. You're think this is what I, you're saying this is how you think it should be, right? No?
No, I just believe in euthanasia.
Okay.
I just, No,
but you're saying we should do it.
Well, some places, some states you can.
So, but what I'm saying is, in general, though, I guess we would have to go back to how this was created, what you believe in as far as creation and why we're here and all that.
Yeah.
But you do believe in reincarnation?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, is there a soul? Do you believe there's a soul?
I do. I have a hard time knowing because I don't really know. I have a lot of theories and thoughts. I just know that my goal for this life is to work on myself the best I can, that because, and maybe it's for my next life, so I do better the next time, or it's also just for living the best I can this life.
Right.
I don't really know. I just know that I don't have a right to tell someone else how to live. I very clearly feel that way.
Yeah.
I don't have a right to tell you, if you feel like you really are in so much pain that you need to be off this earth, whether it be mental, you know, I have a hard time judging that.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah.
I really do.
But are you really looking at the big picture? I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
But because by saying this, I think you sort of like discounting the fact that there's a bigger force than us that we're disturbing. You know what I'm saying?
But how
unless
do you know?
You feel this just became, this is just like a cosmic dust without any intelligence, then you can say, you know, like we were talking with the atheists.
Right, right.
You know?
No, but like, what proof do you have that that has something?
I don't have proof.
Oh, right. But what do you feel when someone takes their life? How does that disturb nature to you?
Because I think that it's... Well, I think any killing is really disturbing nature because we're not the ones that created it. I don't think that we are the ones that have the right to take it.
But what about and, like a lion killing?
But it doesn't
like
matter. You see, if you kill another person, well, you know, I mean, they're programmed to do it that way. You know, I don't think animals, well, obviously animals were not given the intelligence that we do, so you can't judge them by our standards.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but if you think evolution, you did come from animals, there is a sense that like when you do study the chimpanzees, like killing is a very big part of their tribal culture.
Yeah,
they kill each other.
I don't quite believe we came from animals, but
oh, okay. Well, that's just totally different theory.
Yeah. But so let me ask you this. When you are, after you pass, and at your funeral, what do you want people to remember about you?
Hopefully that I'm funny and thin. Okay. No, I'm kidding.
No, really. But
I would hope that that wherever I went, I gave joy to people. That I really, what I want to do is I made someone's day, I make people's lives better, that I helped make people's lives better.
That's cool. So you're more altruistic. You're thinking about how you pleased.
Yeah, I would like my life, whatever, how long it is, to be a positive light in darkness for anyone I touch.
Right, but my thing is, what do you... Oh, okay, all right. So you can be... I mean, you can say you definitely touched a lot of people and that's what you want to be remembered by. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome, yeah.
And it's not that I don't have a relationship with God, or I know what you're saying, what you're trying to say, and like about
no,
like,
I'm not trying to say, I'm really just asking,
No, but about like the source and God and all that,
right?
You do question that because you know, suicide is a charged topic because it does go against what you'd think of in terms of the natural state of things. But I think we're learning, I don't know, maybe this is controversial, I'm not sure, but I just have a hard time getting into other people's business and telling them what they should do with their body. I have a very hard time with that, with almost anything.
Right, right.
And that to me goes against, if that person feels like it's I don't have a right to be in charge of anyone. So.
Right, but I think, look, I think when you say you're in charge of your body, I mean, are you? Because isn't there someone that created it that they should be the ones that, or not they, okay, but it, whatever, you know, the forces of nature, whatever that created you, you're not really the boss. You're not the boss of you, for lack of a better
explanation. But, like, forces of nature don't, but, like, if I want to get a like, forces of nature don't determine my body, I do.
No, but if you created yourself, then I think as the creator, you'd have a right to destroy yourself. But if someone else created you or something else or whatever, if you're not the one that created you, I don't think you should have the right to kill you either. That's just my view on things.
I'm not sure that, like, if someone created me and I'm not allowed to, like, change that, I feel like, well, then do I have free will, or is the person who created me in charge of me?
No, they give you free will. I mean, that's the point. It's not like necessarily a punishment if you kill yourself, but it's also
if you
short, you know, maybe you get disconnected from the positive energies or something in the, you know, I mean, it depends if you look at it spiritually or not. If you believe in the soul, then a lot of what I'm saying makes sense, because there's a reason why the soul comes here and becomes a body. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I have a hard time with that because I also believe a lot more like science. I do believe a lot more scientifically about things.
Right.
I do believe in people's souls, but I don't think that necessarily that means that I couldn't, if someone wanted to be with God and end their life, that soul has, that harmed a soul in any way. Mm. I don't. I think if that, I don't. I really don't. I really have a hard time with that because I think if you give someone free will, you give them free will without conditions. If they want to.
But let me ask you this. Let's say if suicide did not have the consequences spiritually that you're saying, right? Let's say suicide is not a big deal spiritually, mm-hmm. all right? The question is, don't you think everybody would do it?
No.
Why?
Because, I think people...
Because we have an urge to live, right?
Yeah.
Where, I mean, gave us this will to live and the survival mechanism.
Right. But what if your brain chemicals are messed up and you have a lack of any serotonin or dopamine and you don't have an urge to live?
Right. But maybe the soul decided that this is what it needed in order to learn its lessons, because look,
when you talk about reincarnation,
and I guess we are constantly going back from science to
it's to hard, spirituality. Right? They're two different things. And it's hard to like blend both because if you do one, you want to go all in, or if you do the other, you kind of want to go all in. Right. And it's hard to like, I mean, are you saying a creator created you, or did a zygote, you know, create, like a sperm went into an egg and created, you know, there's science versus what happened.
But I think, to me, they're both reconciled. And that's also what Einstein said as well. But to me, they are, because the thing is that we can be spiritual saying there's a force, there's a bigger force than us that created this. And science explains how it was done, you know. But it doesn't negate the fact that a force has started all this, and science doesn't have an answer for it, you know. So, but at the same time, I don't think that people should feel there's a man out there up there that judges you in that way. That's definitely institutionalized religion. But so we're talking about the bigger picture, and I'm just saying, if I'm not the creator of something, I don't have the right to destroy it.
But I guess my body included. What else do you take as the creator? What else do you like? Why is, I guess, I
the
don't...
The intelligence. Maybe it's just intelligence that created us. Still, I'm not the one that created this. We call it the creator.
But why do you... other than just, like, your belief, like, why do you believe that?
Why do I believe it? Because I believe...
That someone else created you.
Okay, because I feel that... or not someone, but I call it an intelligence can't explain.
I see.
Okay, but it's omnipresent, obviously, right? It's everywhere, right? All right. So the thing is that you have to, I don't know, you have to think that something was behind this. The atheist was saying, yeah, it's just 14 billion years of cosmic dust created this. But I say there has been 14 million years of cosmic dust, but there was intelligence that put it together and made us. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it's about,
okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and then my view in spirituality on why we're here, since it's an intelligent force created us, we could be just pawns in a chess game. You know what I'm saying? Maybe he created us just so he can see how we would deal with... we keep saying he all the time,
right,
okay?
Right, of course. You know,
that's
I know
what
you mean.
We're accustomed
of course.
To.
I know what you mean.
But the creator, let's say, meant that the soul needed to go through things. Now, the Kabbalah has explanations as to why.
But
let's say we're given... because I have to explain to myself why we become from spirits into bodies and then again into spirits.
Okay.
Why?
Okay. So, I hear you. I think that's beautiful. I think that's valid. I think that's a really great way of looking at it. Uh-huh. I just don't think... Like, what if that isn't the reason that we were given soul?
Right, but do you want to take the chance?
Yeah, but what if it has... You don't know.
No, I'm not saying. Look, what I'm saying is, I don't say suicide is something you get punished for.
Right.
I look at things as like there's negative energies and positive energies in the universe, right? And it depends what you connect with. And I don't think suicide will connect you to positive energy. That's just what
I mean,
think.
That's a very valid thing to say. And I totally understand that. I have a hard time saying that because I don't. It could be the complete opposite. We have no idea, and I feel like it's almost. And you hear this with atheists. I'm not an atheist. I'm more agnostic because I don't really know. But I do love spiritualism. But I'm definitely more Buddhist, where it's more of a theory of life.
Right.
But I really do believe that Well, now I forgot.
Why do Buddhists say that this has been created? Why are we here?
Buddhism. Well, basically, you in Buddhism, you're reincarnated over and over and over again, thousands of years.
But why is that happening?
Until your life, let's say you have anxiety over. Until you basically reach enlightenment, where you've gotten over all of your fears, all of your hang-ups, and you've reached enlightenment, then you reach nirvana and you go into the soul, you go into heaven, and it's a different thing.
So, but what's the point in that though? Why? I mean, why is there heaven? Why are we being put in that circle?
The idea of in Buddhism and reincarnation is again, you have flaws. Or not flaws, but you're trying to better yourself over time through many, 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 many lives. And each life you see, if it's not done in the past life, it'll be reoccurring in the next one.
I understand, but why is it like that? Why is it like that? How does Buddhism explain why this is happening in the first place? You explain it to me like what it is.
Yeah, that's their theory. That's their theory.
Just like
your theory.
But do they explain why?
Well, that's like your theory.
How did it start?
Where did what start?
The circle that we're doing?
I don't know.
Did it always exist?
I don't know if there's an Eden story, actually. I don't really know. But it's just as random as sort of like the Eden story.
No, not an Eden story. I mean the Big Bang.
You know, I don't know. I don't know enough about it. That's a really great question that I definitely want to find out more about. Does Buddhism mix with science in that way? That's a great question.
Right.
I know.
Or whatever their explanation is to how
it started.
Yeah,
I'll definitely find that out.
Like why we're here in the first place.
That's a great idea.
Okay.
Great idea. I would love
find
to find out
for us because I'm really interested. I just feel. Oh, so I mean, science have proved what the Bible. Okay. The interpreters of the Bible, like the Kabbalah and stuff, they explained how the universe was started from a grain of mustard or something. Okay, but science describes how this whole universe was once just a very small thing that exploded.
So are you don't
full of energy, you know, and it just exploded and it continues to expand.
And you're saying some spiritual force made that explode.
Yes, some intelligence.
See, that's the difference between people. It's whether or not you think that was some magical spiritual force or it was just scientific and the gases reached a certain point and it exploded.
Right, but where did the gas and all the planets
and all
that stuff came from? It's like, you see, you have to, if you want to go to the beginning, you have to become spiritual.
Yeah, or you have to be really scientific.
Exactly. It's like you have no proof.
Right.
And that's what spirituality means.
It's very hard because,
and
I love the way you and I debate because we never really argue, but it's hard to argue spiritualism and faith because you really don't have proof.
You don't.
So if I'm debating you and you're trying to tell me, but the creator created you, and I'm like, well, how do you know that? Right. You can't answer me.
No, it's just only based on my terms.
Exactly.
Based on my Bible, I can tell you that.
It's your thought. That's right. Like, do you think Eden is a real thing and Adam and Eve are real? Well, if people think that, how do you think that? Why do you think that? It's just a book. So it's just, it's hard to argue, but I think it's so interesting that the basic thing to all of it they have in common is humans trying to explain how we start ourselves through gods and stuff. So you see the Greeks and there's a thunderstorm. Well, there must have been a god that created thunder so that we can explain it.
Right.
So we've always been trying to explain ourselves and our presence.
Right.
And that's really where you get faith.
You know, but then you have to wonder, who do we listen to? You know, there's been some sages that devoted their whole life to interpreting the Bible and stuff, you know. So what I'm saying is my suggestion, and that's maybe because my biggest exposure to spirituality has been the Kabbalah.
Sure.
So I suggest for everybody, at least just Google it and see. But if you want, and I recommend it highly to you.
I know Kabbalism. It's very mysticist. It's very much like Buddhism.
Right, but it explains why Jews do the rituals that they do. It explains the Bible. It shows you how like Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob was actually a representation of the right side, the left side, and the center. Now, what does that mean? You have to learn the Kabbalah to understand that, but it's almost like it's a.
But that's if you believe in the Bible,
right?
Right.
No, but they sort of like scientifically try to explain the Bible.
I see. No, what Kabbalah is something very interesting to me too.
It's not having to believe in the Bible, even if you look at it like literally.
Yeah.
So they look okay. So what did Adam and Eve represent?
Sure.
You know,
no,
was it really like two people in a place up there?
Right. Or is it a theory of something?
Or like
a metaphor?
A metaphor. Thank you for something else for people that would not be able to understand right energy, left energy. synergy, all this
totally,
shit, right?
Totally. Was it more of a way of explaining? But again, that takes faith to believe that that's even true.
Right.
So it's just, I'm very curious.
Yeah.
I'm open. I'm just, I don't know. I like proof. I've always been a proof person.
Right, right.
So when you're telling me it's this and that, it's like, I have, it's from where you're born. And I was born very, to be honest, pretty Jewish, but with a lot of curiosity and questioning. And
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's why you are at a point where you've learned a lot about a lot of different things.
Right.
You know, if you stay with your religion and stuff and are not open,
right,
you're not going to be open.
Yeah, because then that becomes a closed heart. I mean, right. Then you're not interested in anything. And how do you know?
Yeah.
I have a hard time with that.
I know. But, you know, I mean, that's just the point. How do you know? You don't know, you know,
exactly.
And my theory is when you don't know how it's going to turn out, that gives you free will, you know. And
I always think you're about to say free willy. I always think free
really,
willy.
Free will.
Yes.
Right.
No, I just think it's funny. Free
yeah.
will.
So, yeah. Anyway, so this is the conversation for today. I had like a million things I wanted to talk about. But we only got to this.
I loved it.
Yeah, I know. We listened to music today.
Yeah,
and
we chilled. Oh, guys, my show's up. My new episode.
Oh, okay.
Of Hack of All Trades. It's on kincommunity.com, KIN. And it's the big homepage. Go watch it. It's on jewelry hacks. What do you do with jewelry? 5 hacks. It's like 2 minutes. Go watch.
Sounds like definitely a guy thing.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of fun. I do say funny things.
It's okay,
so,
girly
yeah.
stuff. But I mean, I love this. Casey
and I
also
look
loves it.
Yeah, Casey loves it. So yeah, it's my second one. The first one went great. So check it out. Kin Community. It's on YouTube, but it's on kincommunity.com.
Awesome. And be looking for our app. We have the dedicated app coming out
Woo-hoo.
In a few days. And you'll be able to listen to us coming out of your ass. So that's about that. Anyway.
Hashtag Maylocks.
Yes. Thank you, Tori.
Anytime.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.